Conspiracy theories are as old as politics, but conspiracies today have introduced something new, conspiracy without theory. And the new conspiracism has moved from the fringes to the heart of government with the election of Donald Trump. That according to our next guests. In their new book, A Lot of People Are Saying, Russell Muirhead and Nancy Rosenblum show how the new conspiracism differs from classic conspiracy theory, why so few officials speak truth to conspiracy, and what needs to be done to resist it. Russell Muirhead is a professor of democracy and politics at Dartmouth College in New Hampshire. Nancy Rosenblum is the Joseph Clark Research Professor of Ethics and Politics and Government at Harvard University. Again, the name of their new book is A Lot of People Are Saying, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Russ and Nancy to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
We're happy to be talking with you.
Excellent. Russell, you are the Robert Clements Professor of Democracy and Politics at Dartmouth College. Give us a sense of why you thought such a book was necessary.
You know, Nancy and I were really disoriented by a lot of what we were reading and seeing in the political world over the last few years. It's really hard to make sense of what's going on with a concoction like Pizzagate, which alleges that, you know, Hillary Clinton's running a sex trafficking ring for children out of a pizzeria in Bethesda. And we, you know, really thought that we needed to reflect on this in order to make sense of what was going on. And that's when we came to see that there's a new kind of conspiratorial thinking at work in politics. It's not at all like the conspiracy theories that we've come to know for a long time.
So, Nancy, give us a sense of this new brand, of what we're seeing now that is different than what it has been in the past.
What we're seeing is the decoupling of conspiracy and theory, and we have conspiracy without the theory. And what that means very simply is that classic conspiracy theory was all about trying to explain some event that was unintelligible or unbelievable. And conspiracy theorists gather evidence and find patterns and they make explanations. And sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong and sometimes they're a mix of the two. Conspiracy without the theory is what we have today, which is its sheer assertion. The president will say the election was rigged, period. No evidence. Or he will say, I had the greatest crowd of any inaugural. And when the pictures, the photographs come out of a rather modest crowd, he says, well, the National Park Service doctored the photos. There's no evidence. There's no argument. It's sheer assertion. His mantra, of course, is just asking questions, or a lot of people are saying. So when he's asked whether it's the case that George Soros is bribing migrants to cross the southern border of the United States, he'll say, I wouldn't be surprised. A lot of people are saying so. So it's conspiracy without the theory.
And Russ, that's, I assume, how the book got its title, A Lot of People Are Saying, and the power, we learn, of repetition.
That's exactly right. I mean, conspiracy theories believe in the authority. They kind of pay heed to the authority of facts and evidence, just like investigative journalism or science. The new conspiracism is not really looking for facts. It's looking for repetition, for retweets, for forwards, for likes. And, you know, if you say something and enough people repeat it, then, as Nancy says, it's true enough.
So this whole idea of conspiracy without theory. So for the consumer, what can we do to understand that? And because it is very easy, I mean, I find this even in my job in the media and in journalism, that it is often difficult not to repeat what has been said, because let's face it, it is also an official quote from the President of the United States.
Right. It is a real dilemma. It's a real dilemma for people covering this. You know, Brandeis had that famous saying that the answer to speech, false speech or malignant speech, is more speech. And it's not clear that how true that is today. I think, however, the journalists really, and politicians, more importantly, perhaps, have to respond by speaking truth to conspiracy. And while it may not change the minds of conspiracist followers of these things, it will gird the public in some ways against these repeated claims.
That's right. I think it, you know, it can allow us to keep hold of our common sense. If we, you know, lose touch with that basic capacity that, you know, prompts us to be skeptical when we encounter something that seems fantastic, then all is lost. But I think if we can strengthen and stay in touch with common sense, there's some hope here.
The point that you made, Joe, about when the president says it, we have to cover it, is the really important point here, that this isn't just conspiracism out there on the internet. It's conspiracism at the heart of government. And it's not just coming from a president who is really quite an insouciant and incessant conspiracist. It's coming from other officials in government. It's coming from elective representatives. It's coming from conspiracy entrepreneurs. And the confluence of these things is really significant and has an effect, not just on public discourse, but on the authority of the institutions that they're attacking. And we see that with the Justice Department today.
You know, I don't think we always have to report it, but sometimes you're left no other choice. So in recent days, when we saw the release of the redacted Mueller report and the Attorney General holds a press conference, and the first word, you look to see how the president's going to respond. I think you have an idea of what it's going to be. And it was a Game of Thrones meme, and it said, you know, no collusion and no conspiracy and nothing was done wrong. So that becomes, because it's from the president, that you almost have to include that into the equation. And I don't know how you don't do that and also don't perpetuate the conspiracy.
Yeah, and, you know, I think what we really believe is that it's not so much the news media that's causing this new conspiracism to have the power it does. It's social media. It's the repetition that happens when people forward and like and retweet. You know, Twitter's becoming a place for ideological cliques to celebrate their own tribe and their own team. So I think when the media reports on something the president says, that's not necessarily what's inflating the power, amplifying the power here. It's the rest of the media. It's social media, and the kind of the force of repetition that gets going on that.
And the new conspiracism, as we describe it, conspiracy without the theory, has a certain power of communication. If you say the word rigged, it's easy to communicate. If you say, well, I'm just asking questions, it's easy to disown. If you say a lot of people are saying, you can actually measure it through the social media. So there are kinds of instant gratifications from this kind of really aggressive political claim.
One of the things that I found fascinating about your book is that we are so often told that that much of what this president and this administration is doing is preaching to the base. They're preaching to the choir. They are trying to hold on to that base. You have a whole section toward the end of the book in getting through to open minds. And I'm interested in just in the beginning of our conversation about that, of how many open minds do you think there really are out there and what the opportunities are to get through to those open minds?
Yeah, that's a great question. And sometimes it seems as though, you know, the open mind in politics has just disappeared. Everybody's made up their mind. Everybody's joined a team. And when you join a team, you commit yourself to a certain set of, to a catechism, a certain set of beliefs. But actually, we think that's still an exaggeration of the way most citizens are. It's true that there's a base, and the base might believe anything try to remake reality so that reality fits what they want. But there are an awful lot of citizens still who are trying to figure out the way things really are and who are paying attention to reality and who have open minds. And for instance, it's been discovered that fact-checking, that institution that has gotten going only in the last 10 years, actually works. It makes a difference. For a while, people were pessimistic about it. And they thought that even in when journalists check a fact and correct a fact, it doesn't matter. It turns out it does matter. So some of these elemental journalistic techniques really do help get through to open minds and help sustain the idea of an open mind.
You also write about a different kind of polarization. You say that conspiracism has created a schism more profound and corrosive than the partisan polarization that has beset American politics in recent years. I often hear that this is just another symptom of that polarization, but you make it clear that this is different. We are at a different place. Right, Nancy?
I think that's right. Now, it is the fact that the new conspiracism and those people who are insensitive to it or who oppose it are polarized on partisan grounds. That is, this new conspiracism really is an artifact of the extreme right that's been accepted by politicians who are not extremists necessarily, but who go along with the president. But what's going on beneath this and the longer-term consequences of this, I think, have to do with what we call what it means to know something. And Russ spoke earlier about common sense. What does it mean to know, as the conspiracists claim, the Democrats organized the confrontation in Charlottesville? For some people, what it means to know that is simply that the president has said it and that it's been retweeted a lot of times, that a lot of people are saying. For other people, most of us, what it means to know something is, well, you know, have the reporters take a look at the evidence and what are the arguments and what are the, you know, can we believe it with some confidence, some rational assurance of being right? And when it comes to politics and there's this kind of divide about what it means to know something and what it means to accept a compromised view of reality that's coming down from you from above and through the social media is a kind of schism that's, we think, more frightening and more destructive for democracy, even than party polarization.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's one thing to disagree. If you and I have different principles, different understanding of justice, we might never agree, and we might be polarized. We might always vote for very different candidates. But we can have an argument. We can have a discussion about health care and who should provide it. When we live in different realities, or when one party distorts reality so they no longer have any contact with the world of facts and evidence, we can't even disagree. We can't even have an argument. And that's the way in which this sort of polarization about what it means to know something cuts deeper than what you might think of as philosophic or ideological or partisan polarization.
Right.
It makes discussion impossible.
Right. It brings us back to the first point about we got into this project because it was so disorienting to hear people, especially the president, describe, give us a very compromised sense of reality and to insist on it over and over and over. And what does it mean and how do we react? And the book really was an attempt to explain our own disorientation and then to show what was happening and why. But this disorientation is very real.
When the disorientation began, when at the start of the campaign, I think a lot of us looked and said, well, this will equal itself out. There are at least a dozen other candidates. Everything will work. Then he became the nominee. And we're like, OK, well, you know, common sense will prevail and everything will be OK. And then the worry became that his behavior, this disorientation that you talk about, would become normalized. And that through that repetition, it would become normalized. We're seeing that, right? I mean, we have, through the news cycle, through the chaos, through just the diversions and effective tactics, it seems as though it is becoming normalized.
Yeah, that's and the real important word there is effective. The more effective these tactics are, the more normal they'll become. And yeah, we really do view this new conspiratorial thinking as a political tactic in many cases, something that's being deployed for political reasons. And whether it becomes normal, how normal it becomes will depend on how effective it is.
It's one thing to talk about normalization, meaning sort of we become desensitized to this aspect of public discussion and discourse. But there's another aspect to this, which is it has real consequences in the world, not only for how people think or what it means to know something, but also for the institutions of government. That is, one of the consequences of this kind of new conspiracism is to delegitimate government, whether it's the National Intelligence Agencies or the National Park Service or the Hawaii Registry of Births that said that Obama had a birth certificate. And as
Weather
these institutions,
Service.
The Weather Service, right. When these institutions are delegitimized, it allows the president and others to put in incompetence. And when the government becomes less competent and more dysfunctional, it becomes more and more delegitimized for more and more people.
Looks more unworthy.
And it sets a precedent that can be used down the road by other people, right? I mean, one of the things that was said during Mitch McConnell and the Supreme Court fight at the end of President Obama's term, when we had eight justices instead of nine, we should have had nine justices, we had eight. Then that becomes a normalization that you can only assume that if the Democrats are put into the same position in however long that would be, they'll do the same thing.
Yeah, and that's the real question. I mean, are the techniques that President Trump has brought right into the center of government, are they effective enough to inspire those who are ambitious for office, you know, younger people who are following his example? And that's the great unknown. It could be that much of what we're seeing is limited to the moment, and that we won't see it 5 or 6 or 7 years from now.
Yeah, that is the question, whether it will become a general tactic that's accepted by all kinds of people who are uncompromising in politics, no matter what their party. But there is some reason to suspect that this is more linked to extremist or really very conservative Republicans, because they, after all, do want to dismantle government in many respects. They are out to limit the scope of the regulatory state, and conspiracism is a sort of asset to help to them in doing that, whereas Democrats, for the most part, want to have more trust and legitimation to the activities and policies and agencies of government. So there is that ideological difference. Whether in the end that makes a difference in using this kind of malignant tactic is unclear.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, for the longest time, of course, even conservatives wanted an effective government. They wanted a government that could stand up to communism all over the world. That's a very effective government that needs to do that. And this more radical anti-government, I'm not even sure if we should call it conservatism, but this more radical philosophy is something very different.
Why do you think that the Republicans, Mitch McConnell and Republican leaders, both in the House and in the Senate prior to the midterms and even now, even when they see the danger signs, even when they see the concerns, are still supporting, backing, and at very least not coming out and saying anything that would somehow undermine what the president is saying within this conspiracism?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, that partisan reticence is very corrosive, don't you think, Nancy?
Yes. And it is the $64,000 question. Why people who have been in government for a long time, who understand how it operates and the importance of having a well-functioning government, will go along with this. And, you know, there's lots of conjectures, and it probably differs from person to person. First of all, there's fear. Trump has shown that he really has a very powerful base. And if these people want to get reelected, and if reelection is the most important thing overall, they can't oppose him. There's also a kind of opportunism. That is, he has allowed them to get, in the last few years, two of the biggest things on their agenda, a tax cut of a certain kind, and free, sort of a free hand in changing not just the Supreme Court, but federal courts generally. And, you know, I think the desire to do those things and the intention of doing these things in an uncompromising way preceded Trump. But he gave them a freer hand because the norms of how to behave politically had been, deteriorated.
In the close of your book, and I'm not in the habit of giving away the conclusions of books, but I think in this case it's probably safe. You use the president's own words. There's something going on that's really, really bad, and we better get smart and we better get tough, or we're not going to have much of a country left. Okay. So how do we do that?
Yeah. That's a great question. You know, one of the things we think we'd really like to see is less of this partisan reticence. I mean, we think that Republican office holders have a very distinctive kind of authority when it comes to speaking truth to conspiracism. And we also really put a lot of stock in the news media and its power to speak truth. And we think that there's a lot of hope for everyday common sense in resisting this. But it's going to take a certain kind of toughness. We're going to have to stand fast.
And right. And Nancy, as far as optimism, is that a word that you would apply here?
Not optimism, because there are too many uncertainties, but I would say hopefulness. Hopefulness.
Yeah.
I think that the common sense of the American people really is something to be hopeful for, that Payne's great pamphlet, The Common Sense, has made it so that it is a resource for American people, even when institutions and even when the Constitution are abused.
It's being tested, but it could prevail.
Well, the book is very important, and I just think everyone should read it, certainly in our business, but, everybody. It's really important to help you, understand what's going on. It's called A Lot of People Are Saying, The New Conspiracism and the Assault on Democracy. It is published by Princeton University Press. Russell Muirhead and Nancy Rosenblum, I thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. It's a great pleasure to have you both on the program.
Well, it's our
Thank
pleasure.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. This is great.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Again, the name of the book is A Lot of People Are Saying, The New Conspiracism and the Assault on Democracy by Russell Muirhead and Nancy Rosenblum. The book is published by Princeton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.